Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Morgan Lee on how ministries approach the difficult issue of paying ransom for kidnapped missionaries.
I thought that was very interesting to kind of think about the semantics of all of that and the reality of all of that. So, for instance, he said he's seen instances where kidnappers are compensated for essentially sheltering and providing provisions to the hostages. So no ransom is paid, but there is money that is given in acknowledgement of the fact that, you know, these people were clothed and fed and maybe not taken care of, but given a place to sleep during this particular time. And that there is a dance that has to be done when it comes to all of these things.
Morgan Lee, next. Along with the other challenges missionaries often face in serving overseas is the possible, although seemingly unlikely, event of being kidnapped for ransom. Today's guest says missions and aid organizations would typically agree paying ransom is not a wise decision. But as you'll hear, they're not the only ones making those decisions. We'll be exploring this subject with Morgan Lee, Global Media Manager for Christianity Today and writer of the piece, Counting the Cost of Paying Ransom for Missionaries. Morgan, tell us what prompted this article.
Last year, I want to say almost a year ago, right? The president of Haiti was assassinated. And at that time, I was working on my podcast, which I think we'll talk a little bit more later on the show, called Quick to Listen. And Quick to Listen is a news show where we would cover things, essentially whatever the big story was that week. And so that kind of set off the genesis of me doing a decent amount of reporting about Haiti over the course of the year. Unfortunately, that was not the only thing that happened in Haiti. There was also an earthquake that took place a couple months after the president was assassinated. And then there was a very high profile kidnapping of a number of North American missions workers. But through all the different reporting, I began to amass just a network of folks that were both Haitian Christian leaders and also those who worked in the security space as well. And so this piece came out a little bit after the kidnapping case had finished. And we saw details that had come out from the Associated Press that essentially had said that some of those that had been kidnapped, not the entire party, but some of those that had been kidnapped had actually been freed via a ransom. And so that type of news is always a little bit startling when you see, you know, headlines coming out from a high profile kidnapping. You know, does money ever change hands? We're going to talk about that more in a second, but it's not usually something that will get leaked out there, at least right away. And so, you know, this began a story that I wanted to look at about, you know, how do ransoms work in a lot of these specifically missions contexts.
And interestingly enough, as that was the news in Haiti, the kidnapped missionaries with that particular missions organization, Christian Aid. But you point out in your article that that hundreds of people were kidnapped in Haiti last year. This wasn't an isolated incident by any means.
No, it wasn't an isolated incident at all. And I had actually worked on a piece about 2 months before the end of the year had happened, where I was looking at kind of like larger security concerns that were going on in Haiti. So one of the realities of Haiti is that the law enforcement there just doesn't have a lot of teeth to it, right? And you have these particular gangs who, in order to fund a lot of their operations, do so by kidnapping. And so kidnapping is by no means something that often happens, you know, that foreigners are maybe especially at risk at. Instead, there's a lot of locals who often find themselves vulnerable to this type of situation. And in fact, there was an American citizen a couple weeks before this Christian Aid kidnapping occurred. He was a pastor and he was kidnapped, and I believe that his ransom was paid for, and that flew much less under the radar when that one had happened.
In general, what kind of policies do mission organizations typically have regarding paying ransoms for kidnapped missionaries?
From what I could tell in my reporting, not all organizations even have kidnapping policies.
Oh,
right. So I don't know if this is just something that people do not expect will happen to them. If it is, yeah, I'm not exactly sure the reasons why there's not always that built into that. But for of those who do, I think a number of them will have no ransom policies. Mm. You know, I think that is a general consensus that you're going to put in there. I would say maybe it would not be a good idea, even if you are going to pay the ransom, to put in your policy, we will consider paying a ransom, you know, if our staff members are kidnapped. So I don't think that's a very surprising posture that they would include in that.
So in some ways, it might be wise to not lay out too many specifics.
Which is something that I had to deal with when I was, you know, trying to do some interviews about this, because for obvious reasons, people might be reticent to share specifics about what their own policies might look at. But the folks that I talk to that see things through a more big picture lens are definitely would acknowledge that a lot of organizations may not have, up until this time, really leaned into how are we going to be reacting in these particular situations? What is our plan going to be?
Now, you cite a Denver Seminary professor who thought that the paying of the ransom in this case in Haiti for those missionaries, and it was not by the missions organization, it was by some private individual, but to help free them, but that was somehow was a mistake. Is that right? Is that what that Denver professor was saying?
Du même, no à l'est.
Okay.
So he is actually originally from Haiti, and now he teaches at Denver Seminary. So I think that what Noah Least was hoping was going to happen in this situation is that they would essentially treat fire with fire, right? That, you know, where since it didn't seem like the Haitian police were putting up much of a fight or the Haitian military was about to do something that North America, you know, since there were North Americans involved, that we might see the U.S. show up and decide to kind of, again, put some teeth into this and potentially scare the kidnappers a bit. One of the things that has really happened, right, is in the past couple of years, when I talked to folks on the ground, they linked it with the departure of the UN peacekeepers, who I believe left in 2019, as creating somewhat of a security vacuum mm-hmm. that had happened. In that absence, gangs had become increasingly emboldened. And then, of course, you have not only the assassination of the president, but the assassination of the president where there were very few arrests and it wasn't exactly clear who killed the president, right? Even before that had happened, there had been essentially a big disagreement with the president and the rest of the government over whether it was lawful for the president to still be in power, right? Anyway, there'd been all these kind of like high or at the top conflicts over who held power, and it allowed these gangs to really become emboldened. And I think what Noah Least was hoping is that, no, there needs to be some way that someone can say, like, no, you just can't get away with this anymore, right? When we move into a ransom territory, right, when we move into talking to these people, obviously that's often out of concern for who's in these groups. And but when you're thinking of like larger national security concerns, especially for Haiti, and the fact that, we just mentioned that a lot of Haitian locals are at risk of kidnapping, like what is actually going to make this stop in the long term? And Noah Least was definitely hoping that not only would the U.S. maybe come in guns blazing, but then they would commit to training and helping out the security forces that, you know, didn't seem to be providing much security on the ground.
But that didn't happen. Apparently.
That did not happen. No. Instead, I mean, I think for many people who follow this case, it seems like a number of them were able to escape in ways that haven't necessarily been totally disclosed up until this point, mm-hmm. Aside from these three individuals here who it was reported that a ransom had been used for their release.
Well, we're talking about counting the cost of paying ransom for missionaries. It's an article that Morgan Lee wrote for Christianity Today. She is the global media manager for them. And my understanding, Morgan, I think you said this in a sense, that many missions organizations, at least in an official sense, say they don't pay ransom. Is that fair to say? That
of the folks that would probably have some sort of policy on the books, I'm pretty sure that's the approach that they would take. I mean, that's also the approach that the U.S. government takes, too. We will never pay ransoms.
I guess the idea is that paying ransom will increase the likelihood, of course, that this will happen again, that it will mm-hmm. embolden the kidnappers. And I don't know if there's any way to know the answer to this, but Did that ransom paid for those released missionaries in Haiti? Has it? Is there any sense that it's increased the level of danger for other missionaries in Haiti or other people in Haiti?
To my knowledge, no. Here we are in July, and I have not seen at least high profile, right? When I say high profile, I think that often either means someone in the Haitian elite or someone that's part of the expat community or a foreign missions worker being targeted. I have not seen that headlines of something like that coming out this year. Now, has the situation materially gotten better? One of the points that comes out in this article actually is I spoke with one woman who leads a group that does a lot of short-term missions trips to Haiti. And she mentioned that they had canceled all of their trips for 2022, right? So one of the things that becomes hard to say is like, yes, none of this had happened, but obviously there were a number of international groups that were pivoting in their strategy, especially their like on the ground strategy as well. And so did this ransom exactly have an effect? No, but the larger security concerns on the ground have had huge effects for how Christian ministries have operated.
And the wild card on all of this, and you write about this in the piece, of course, is that, okay, missions organizations can say, we don't pay ransom, but then you have the family members or others, people in the background somewhere that will help out financially and sometimes to some significant aspect. Did you get a sense of how the missions organizations deal with that? I mean, do they have a plan? Do they have a contingency plan if there is a kidnapping? And then what happens next?
Well, there's a lot of parties that get involved, and whose responsibility is it to essentially work to get this person out of the country? Is this the U.S. government, assuming these are Americans, right? Is this the family members? Is this the organizations? Who does this ultimately fall into? And it does seem like a lot of it does fall to the family. Like this situation resolved itself within a couple of months, right, with the Christian aid workers. But I was recently at a presentation where they were talking about particular hostages that are being held in North Africa. And these folks have been held in these communities for years, right? And the U.S. government is definitely aware of those situations and says that they're working on it. But those that are feeling the most responsible are the family members, right? And the family members are the ones that are continuing to advocate and so forth. So yeah, there's a number of parties that are in the room and people who feel truly invested in getting this done. And I'm not saying like one of these groups does not feel truly invested. There's just a lot of like priorities that everyone's trying to shuffle. But you can imagine that there's often intense disagreement about what should be done to remove the people from these particular situations.
And that brings in the subject of hostage negotiations. Can you talk about that? I mean, this sounds like a realm that many people perhaps have not considered when you think about a missionary going overseas and to think, well, it's unlikely, but if there's a kidnapping and then somebody has to negotiate with the kidnappers, and that's actually something that there are organizations which specialize in doing
right.
that.
There are. And I definitely think worth talking to them and for, you know, more specifics and stories, because they're going to be able to give you more wrinkles about how all this is meted out. But one of the interesting points that one of the leaders of a Christian organization that I had talked to, his name is John Berger, and he works at a place called Crossroad. He had just mentioned to me that just because we're under this impression that a ransom was not paid, it does not mean that money has not changed hands. And I thought that was very interesting to kind of think about the semantics of all of that and the reality of all of that. So for instance, he said he's seen instances where kidnappers are compensated for essentially sheltering and providing provisions to the hostages. So no ransom is paid, but there is money that is given in acknowledgement of the fact that, you know, these people were clothed and fed and maybe not taken care of, but given a place to sleep during this particular time. And that there is a dance that has to be done when it comes to all of these things and how money is discussed and talked about. I also spoke to another woman who mentioned the other previous group that had canceled their trips for this year. And she had said that when she has seen hostage situations before, they've almost all had money that has somehow changed hands or so forth. It does seem that it is extraordinarily rare that the ransom that is set is the ransom that is paid, or how about this? The ransom that is set is equivalent to the money that ends up getting paid to the kidnappers themselves, but it seems also equally implausible in most situations that they're not, the kidnappers are not getting any funds at all.
So do you have a sense of if the ransom is paid or money is given from somebody, from some source, does that usually or almost always result in the release of the hostages? In other words, does that seem like the right thing to do?
Seems like there's so many things in these situations that go wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Communication goes wrong. I feel like that often happens. Obviously, you know, both sides are trying to somehow win in these types of instances. And these groups are trying to avoid prosecution themselves. Like, I mean, again, we're talking about a group, right, which is operating outside of the law, right? But what happens if the law does decide that they do want to crack down on these groups or can crack down on these groups, right? If the military from the country that they're operating in does show up, how does that end up changing what's happening? Because the country themselves that these groups may be living in may have a separate agenda too than, you know, those the stakeholders that are trying to get the person, the hostage out of that situation. So I imagine that giving the kidnappers what they want or a version of what they want, there are many instances in which that does help you secure what you want in that situation. My sense after doing this type of reporting is that there are a lot of factors at play in all of this work, and it's extremely complicated. It's not as simple as just a normal transaction, right, of giving your money and then receiving goods on the other side.
And in that context of ransom and kidnapped missionaries, there's the famous case, of course, you write about it a bit in your article for CT, that of Martin and Gracia Burnham going back to 2002. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that, what happened there, and that ransom obviously was a part of this story?
So back in 2002, there was an American couple who had been kidnapped while they were on a trip, I believe, and the family members of this couple had arranged for a philanthropist to pay more than $300,000 to this Islamist extremist group, which had kidnapped them while they were in the Philippines. And according to the CT reporting that I read about this at the time, because this is something that the publication covered, local police did deliver the money. And then the group said, no, wait, we want more, right? The Filipino military did decide that they were going to intervene at this particular point. And when they intervened, Martin Burnham was actually killed and the kidnappers escaped. And then when Gracia was back in the U.S., you know, she was very upset about the outcome of the situation. She said that her husband would have lived if the full ransom had been paid, and obviously brought a lot of these issues front and center.
Well, my guest today on His People is Morgan Lee, and we're talking about her article, Counting the Cost of Paying Ransoms for Missionaries. In terms of training of missionaries, were you able to ascertain to what extent the possibility of kidnapping is part of training? There are many missions organizations that send their people across the world. Any sense of that? Is this something that they prepare them, that this is possible?
Yeah, I imagine it depends on the context that missionaries are being sent to, right? We also read stories, for instance, about a number of Korean missionaries who were in Afghanistan. I believe this was about a little bit more than a decade ago, many of whom were kidnapped. And so one of the effects that ended up happening from this was the group that these missionaries were a part of also had a presence in China. And so when it became clear that there were South Korean missionaries in Afghanistan, it was also used to like help locate the missionaries, the Korean missionaries in China. And that group ended up getting booted as a result out of China, out of a situation, you know, stemming from a situation that had happened in Afghanistan. And so, you know, that again, this is an incident that I'm recounting from over a decade ago. It would make me think that that really helped put, you know, make things more concrete for missions organizations that maybe had maybe been a little bit like blasé about this. But I don't know. I mean, this most recent kidnapping that had happened, I think for everyone, it was a little bit shocking that the number of people who were kidnapped, it was more than a dozen people who were kidnapped and included children, right? And it happened during a time that everyone knew was already unsafe, right? This happened several months after the president had been assassinated. One of the other things that had happened in Haiti last year was that the gangs really began to kind of control the fuel lines, right? And make it very challenging for people to get gas and so forth. And yeah, all of this happened during a time that was not, that did not come as a shock largely to the fact that security was at maybe an all-time low, even for a country that has struggled in this area a lot.
And in terms of the missions organizations themselves, this is just asked you about if they advise missionaries that this could be a possibility. But then the missions organizations themselves, did you get a sense that they have crisis or contingency plans for something like this?
Yes. So I will admit that it is hard for me to speak for on behalf of all the different missions agencies that are out there, at least from talking to the folks that I talked to. One of them, again, Megan Schreiber, who I've mentioned a couple times, she had just mentioned that she felt like it was causing her organization to review their policies on this. And when I had talked to some of the other folks who were doing big picture stuff, they had mentioned that they had felt like this was causing organizations to also reevaluate things from a larger level. So yeah, I do think that there's a lot of times where those of us who are doing work that our best intentions just have not fully looked at everything from every angle of what could go wrong, and have, you know, put a lot of faith in maybe following best practices in many areas and the local partners that are on the ground, but have not fully explored everything out there from a crisis standpoint.
And in terms of counting the cost of paying ransom for missionaries, Morgan, did you get a sense that the situation of the release of the Christian Aid hostages in Haiti, there was not paid by Christian Aid, but by some other behind-the-scenes person? Is there a real valuation of paying ransom to free kidnapped missionaries?
At this point, I don't think so. I will say that this particular news, when it came out, it didn't really seem to make a lot of waves. I felt like when I was talking to the folks that I contacted for this story, I was kind of the first person who was asking a lot of these questions, and that this was not something that was a flashpoint. The actual kidnapping itself, for sure, but the fact that three of them had been paid, or the fact that three of them had been cured via ransom, did not seem to be something that was actively pressing on their minds.
Well, Morgan, you produce a podcast for Christianity Today. What is that called?
Quick to Listen.
Quick to Listen. And you had a guest on your program, a lady named Anna Hampton. I think that might be a pseudonym. But it was under the subject of, does God really want missionaries to risk their lives? And I'm wondering, can you share a point or two, who she is and what her view about the danger, the risk factor is of being a missionary today?
Yes, we had Anna Hampton on the week that this kidnapping ended up happening. And Anna Hampton is a pseudonym for this really interesting woman who has worked in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Turkey, other parts of Central Asia and the Middle East, and has written a book called Facing Danger, A Guide Through Risk. And we were really excited that we could have her on this show. And so she was talking about the importance of developing a theology of risk, which is not something that I think we always kind of think about. What, you know, one of the questions when I was talking to her, I was just like, okay, you know, how do you balance this tendency of like, should I be doing something for God? You know, God wants me there, so whatever happens, it's going to be all right. You know, and she says this, I'm just going to paraphrase a little bit from our discussion that we had with her. She said when she was writing her dissertation, the first question that she had was like, what are all the things that people have said to me that were not helpful? And then she said, the first one that came to mind was, you're never safer than when you're in the center of God's will. That was just like, wow, that is not actually true. And that is not actually the way that God necessarily works, right? Like, yes, everything will be okay in eternity. And it is also important to look at what are the threats? What are the external vulnerabilities when I'm going into an area? What am I risking? What is it wise for me to do? And how are you constantly evaluating risk in a way that doesn't just, you know, have you cherry pick Bible verses out there and say like, oh, I think God is justifying it in this particular situation. You know, she has this quote where she's like, we're not out here just to randomly let ourselves be killed. We're there to be purposeful about serving the Lord Jesus. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that was like a really profound thing for just to like sit that right. Like missionaries are not there. And one of the things that this conversation with her made me think, and it came up later in our conversation too, it's not just our security, right? It's not just an individual thing. What happens when people get kidnapped? Well, like I was, you know, we've been talking about in the past couple minutes, organizations, whole organizations are reevaluating policies. They're reevaluating whether to send foreigners onto the ground. They're reevaluating how to work with foreigners who are already on the ground. They're reevaluating how they're going to, what type of pressures and asks they're going to ask their local staff to make, and how the local staff are going to have to interact and do their job, and what type of profile they're going to be able to cut, what type of negotiations. The more that you think about it, there's all these just like extreme trickle down effects that can happen out of coming out of this. And, you know, a lot of these, this thought process really came from talking to Anna about all of this and seeing that, oh, wow, there's a much bigger picture here than just an individual kidnapping, right? An individual kidnapping may be one thing, but, it, you know, as, even in the same way that we're talking about the fact that these ransoms can change, or that kidnapping, the number of kidnappings might change, there's so many other things that are happening with, you know, what these groups are trying to do, which is oftentimes these groups are trying to help people, right? Mm-hmm. But their work becomes very consumed with thinking about how to mitigate risk all the time. And that can be, for people who are very careless, it can have really wide-ranging effects.
Morgan, your piece is counting the cost of paying ransom for missionaries. We've talked about a lot of different issues. Missions organizations typically don't have ransom. They will not typically pay ransom. Often it's people behind the scenes or family members, and then that brings other ramifications. And of course, there's risk factors that have to be considered for missionaries, for the missions organizations. I'm wondering, as we come kind of toward the end of our discussion today, what would you like the takeaway for the listener to be? What would you like them to think about, to consider, to make sure they didn't miss?
One of the things that people that are listening to on this show, their experience most likely of these high profile kidnappings is going to be reading about it through the news, right? But even as you might be praying for God to free this person, you know, I would definitely include in your prayers all the other people who are actually not kidnapped and are working on the scene, whose lives are nevertheless affected gravely by this type of work. You can also pray for tensions that are going on, right? As you can imagine, when something like this happens, there is very likely that there is frustration from other groups. Potentially there is thoughts about the other group being careless for this happening, or not following best protocols, or making a bad name, or making things harder for everyone else, right? I mean, we talk a lot about Christian unity, and these are types of things that make it hard to be on the same page with different groups. You can obviously pray for, you know, the interests of the families, the organizations themselves, the U.S. government, how all these things are being prayed for. And then I don't know how many people right now are following the situation with the WNBA star, Brittany Griner. She's currently right now on trial, quote unquote, in Russia, right? For essentially bringing in marijuana to the country. She had a very tiny amount and she was arrested, and it looks like she will be facing more than 5 years in prison as a result of this situation. And she had a chance to communicate with her family back at home and talked a little bit about how scared and lonely she was. Hers was obviously a little bit different than the Christian aid workers, because the Christian aid workers, there were 17 of them, and for better or for worse, they were in a situation where they had each other. But there's a lot of hostages out there, Christian hostages, and folks like Brittany as well, who are by themselves and who do not know if they will ever get out or if they're ever be allowed to be free. And yeah, I would say pray for Brittany and pray for others out there. There are who are just despairing, really feel like they're at the whims of forces that are completely beyond their control. So yeah, just pray for their own morale in really, really excruciating circumstances.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Morgan Lee, Global Media Manager for Christianity Today. You can read her piece, Counting the Cost of Paying Ransom for Missionaries, at ChristianityToday.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again on Monday at this same time for another edition of His People.